Well, thank you very much indeed for that kind introduction. It's really great to be with you in Dublin this morning and to be in such a terrific venue for this breakfast and talk. It's really very impressive to see so many people coming along this early on a Monday morning for a talk that has something to do with religion of all things. Worse than that, it's somebody from the north giving a talk on religion, and knowing the reputation of some of my fellow northerners on these kinds of topics, I was a bit worried as to whether anybody would be here this morning, so thank you very much for coming along. I got a bit of a fright the other day. At the university, we were getting ready for the new term, which actually starts in about an hour and 20 minutes. We were getting ready for the new term, and it crossed my mind that it's 25 years ago that I was starting my own undergraduate studies. Now, 25 years to me, and I'm sure to many of you, doesn't actually seem like it's all that long ago, until you stop to think about it and realize that it's 25 years. Of course, to my children, 25 years, that's like an eternity as far as they are concerned. 25 years, they would refer to that as the olden days. That's when everything was in black and white. And more to the point, nobody had a mobile phone or a tablet back then. What sort of a world was that? It's just incomprehensible to them. But 25 years ago, as I started out as a student, and I was working, studying science, mathematics in particular, but I was also a Christian. And I had a lot of questions going through my mind. I'm sure, like many of you, I had this perception from the media and elsewhere that there was a conflict between science on the one hand and belief in God in the other. And so this started a journey for me looking into these kinds of questions, trying to find out, are they in conflict or do they fit well together? What exactly is the story here? Now, some people would tell you that faith is just believing something without evidence. It's not asking the difficult questions. It's just believing what somebody else tells you. Well, all I can say is that from my perspective, that hasn't been the case at all. From my perspective, actually asking those questions has been part of my faith. In fact, I doubt I would have a faith today if I didn't ask those questions. And so this has been an ongoing journey, finding out the objections, thinking through them, reading the atheist material, and trying to find out where other people are coming from in terms of their objections. And this has just been part of my journey as a Christian. And so that has continued over the last 25 years. I'll come back to it a little bit later, because I came across some really helpful material back then that actually strengthened my belief in God, that science, far from undermining it, provided support for it. So, in a sense, actually, when it comes to this talk this morning, I was only invited to give this talk a few months back from Norm here, but in fact, in a sense, I've been preparing this talk for 25 years, so I better get it right. And the difficulty is I've now got to try to compress that into 25 minutes or so that I have left this morning. So let's see how we get on with that. I want to start with a riddle. Everyone has one. Many people don't realize they have one. Some people have changed theirs. And most people don't think about theirs, even though it affects their whole life. Let me run through that again. Everyone has one. Many people don't realize they have one. Some people have changed theirs. And most people don't think about theirs, even though it affects their whole life. What is it?
Faith.
I hear the expression a worldview, and that's what I'm aiming for. So, faith, worldview, that's pretty close. Everybody has a worldview. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, basically, I would say a worldview is an outlook on life. It consists of answers or views, beliefs about the world. And it provides a foundation for how we live our lives. So we can think of a worldview as a framework or a foundation for life. So it addresses some of the big questions. What is the fundamental nature of reality? So a Christian might say, well, the fundamental nature of reality is God, and he is the creator then of everything else. An atheist, by contrast, might say, well, the physical universe is all there is. Secondly, what is a human being? Is there something special or unique about human beings? Third, what's the purpose of life, if there is one? Fourth, what basis is there for right and wrong, for morality? And finally, a really important one, what happens when we die? Now, that's a lot of big questions for this time on a Monday morning. I'm not sure that we can really do justice to those. I certainly can't in my time remaining this morning. But what I would like to try to do is to encourage you to think about your worldview. Because it affects everything we do in life, it's hard to think of a more important topic than this. Now, you might say, I don't have a worldview. I don't have answers to those big questions you've just been asking. Well, in a sense then, I would say that is your worldview. You might be suspicious of people who do think they have the answers to all those questions and who let that affect their life. So you don't, perhaps. But then, your belief system affects your life. You have a worldview as well. So I want to focus on two worldviews this morning. The first one is Christianity, which historically has been the dominant worldview in this part of the world and has shaped our society. But also I want to look at atheism, or in a particular brand of atheism, which has been in the rise. Atheism has been increasing over the last 10 to 20 years. Now, it's not that an awful lot of people would say they're atheists. Many people wouldn't. But I think many people are perhaps what I might call practical atheists. Now, what I mean by that is, perhaps there's a God, they will say, but actually, that has no role to play in their lives. There's a story about a man who was coming to visit Belfast during the Troubles. And he was out for a walk one evening. And he went a bit too far, took a wrong turn, ended up going down a rather dimly lit street. And he was confronted by this group of thugs. And they stopped him and asked him, are you a Catholic or a Protestant? Now, he had to think quickly. He didn't know how to answer. But one thing he did know was that giving the wrong answer to this question could get him into a lot of trouble. So he quickly said, I'm an atheist. To which he responded, well, are you a Catholic atheist or a Protestant atheist? And so I think what I want to say is that although we maybe don't have many genuine atheists, we perhaps have a lot of Catholic and Protestant atheists, practical atheists. God really isn't of much relevance to their lives. So what I want to do is to look at a particular worldview, a particular brand of atheism called the New Atheism. Around 2004 to 2007, there were a number of very popular best-selling books written by high-profile atheists. The evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins wrote a famous book called The God Delusion. The late Christopher Hitchens, the author and journalist, wrote a book called God Is Not Great. Now, they provided a very simple and straightforward answer to the God question. There is no God. Science shows us that. No rational person in the 21st century can believe in God or be a Christian. Let's take the point about science. As far as they were concerned, science played a central role in their atheism. Science, after all, is rational because it's based on evidence. Religion, on the other hand, is irrational because it's based on faith. Well, I've already had something to say about that. But also science, as it explains more and more about the world, well, there's less and less need for God. God is kind of made redundant. That's one of their arguments. And also when it comes to to Christianity, well, again, no rational person could accept the claims of Christianity, of this man Jesus who claimed to be the Son of God. And as for the idea that he rose from the dead, well, again, nobody in the modern world, given modern science, could believe those sorts of things. Well, from what I said earlier, that 25-year journey, of course I started reading this material. And I read all their books, and I was quite surprised in a sense. Because going back now to those early days as a student, looking at this material, as I mentioned earlier, I'd come across some great resources, what I would call the new theism. So we've got the new atheism, but I would call this the new theism. From about the 1970s or so, there were various philosophers, scientists, theologians who started to make a much more compelling case for God and for the central claims of Christianity. The irony here was that part of this was based on the findings of science itself. And so I'd come across all this great material, and yet when I read the new atheists, they just ignored all of this. Let me give you a couple of examples. At the center of the new atheism, the clinching factor, if you like, was Charles Darwin. His argument, his work about the evolution by natural selection, was central to their case. Well, that was a major development in 19th century science. What about the 20th century? Well, let me mention two major developments that some of these writers I'd come across were talking about. The first one was an absolutely astonishing discovery in 20th century physics, and this was that the universe was expanding. And what they realised was, if you think back in time then, if it was expanding, it must be shrinking as you go back in time, and actually shrinking right back to nothing. And this gave evidence for a beginning to the universe. Now, it didn't take people long to realise if the universe had a beginning, that was going to be a major problem for atheism. As the famous cosmologist Stephen Hawking has said, it smacked of divine intervention. And so they tried to avoid this idea of a beginning. Here was science itself pointing to something beyond the physical universe. But furthermore, over the last 40 years or so, scientists have made another remarkable discovery, and this is that our universe is just right for life, balanced on a razor's edge. Okay? Some people call this the Goldilocks enigma. Hopefully, like your breakfast this morning, not too hot, not too cold, just right. And as far as our universe is concerned, just right for life and just right to an extraordinarily high degree of precision. One author puts it like this. You imagine a dartboard that's the size of our entire galaxy and a bullseye just a trillionth of an inch in diameter. That's the kind of precision that is required for you to be here this morning, for intelligent life to exist. Furthermore, when it came to Christianity, in the early 20th century, many people had completely dismissed the claims of Christianity, the Gospels that we find in the New Testament. These were just fictions written long after the events. Jesus, yes, he existed as a historical character, but really we couldn't know very much about him. In the second half of the 20th century, things changed a lot. People became much less sceptical. Now, I'm not giving the impression that everybody was becoming a Christian or anything like that, but they now said, well, just wait a minute. We can't dismiss all these sources. For one reason, they found that these sources actually were written much earlier than they had realised. Furthermore, we had these diverse sources telling us the same thing. And perhaps in particular, the more historians learned about the Jewish context of the first century, the more they realised that actually they could make sense of Jesus in this context as a real human being who lived and taught along the lines that the Gospels tell us. Not that they accepted this as God's word or something like that, but just that we could no longer dismiss these as historical sources. Furthermore, what we also find, a bit later on in the early 2000s, some very significant philosophers and historians making very detailed arguments just from well-established historical facts for the resurrection of Jesus. Not because the Bible says so, but just on the basis of well-established facts about Jesus' crucifixion, which of course was beyond dispute, but also well-established facts about the aftermath of that as well. And so making a very credible case for this. Now, I don't have time to go into that. It's a wonderful topic, and I'd encourage you to do so if you're interested. I learned a lot when I started reading around this. But now, having looked at all that material, you can imagine how I felt when I started approaching the new atheists, because they ignored all of this. Let's then think about the new atheism in terms of some of those big worldview questions that I was talking about. What's the fundamental nature of reality? Well, they would tell us that it's just the physical universe. That's all there is. But given these findings of modern science, I think there's good evidence that points beyond the physical universe to a cause, an explanation that is non-physical. What about the second question? What's a human being? Well, they would tell us that human beings are just the accidental byproduct of a process that was unguided and didn't have us in mind. Well, they based that, as I said earlier, on Darwin's theory of evolution, a high mark of 19th century science. What about 20th century science, though? Evolution, it requires the laws of physics to be in place. It requires the order that we find in the universe. It requires that fine-tuning, that incredible degree of fine-tuning that I talked about earlier. And various other factors are required for evolution. And all of these are pointing to an intelligent mind, an intelligent creator or designer behind the universe. So actually, intelligent life isn't beginning to look so accidental anymore. But what about those other worldview questions that I mentioned? Does the new atheism provide an adequate basis for how to live a life? Well, here I think it's been a complete disaster. For it tells us that ultimately there is no purpose to our lives. Death is the end. That's it. And they provide no adequate basis for how we should live in terms of right and wrong. And so I think there are serious problems with the new atheism as a worldview, both intellectually and practically. In fact, some of the critics of the new atheists have said that one of the problems is they're not really serious enough about their atheism. Try telling that to Richard Dawkins. Why is that? Well, some of the critics would say what they want to do is they want to get rid of God and leave everything else pretty much as it is, that we can go on in life continuing as normal. Whereas some of the really serious atheists of the 20th century said, you get rid of God, you get rid of everything else too. How can we go on living as if there is a purpose to life? How can we go on thinking that there's a basis for right and wrong if we've got rid of the foundations? And in fact, this is one of the things that worries me as a society. How can we go on thinking about these kinds of things when we've got rid of the foundations? So what does that leave us with? Religion? Well, people's attitudes to religion have changed an awful lot during those 25 years, to an incredible degree. One thing is that people don't just accept what religious leaders are saying anymore in terms of truths about spirituality. It used to be we would sort of accept those people who seemed to know what they were talking about. Not anymore. If we want to find spiritual truth, the best place to go these days is Google. Okay, we go onto the internet and we find our own truths. This is summed up by the story of a woman and her young son who were going shopping in town one day. And it turned out that a priest, a newly appointed priest, had arrived in the town fairly recently. And he was in the town, finding his way, wasn't sure where he was going. And he stopped this lady and her son and said, "Excuse me, could you tell me how to get to the post office?" So they told him, they said, "Well, if you go down that street and you turn right and you take the second left, you'll see it just across the road." And he thanked them and then said, "By the way, I haven't seen you at Mass. I've just been here a while, but I haven't seen you yet. Maybe you'll come along some week." Then he pointed to the little boy and he said, "If you come, I'll tell you how to get to heaven." And the little boy sort of laughed and he said, "Tell me how to get to heaven." He said, "You don't even know the way to the post office." So I think this is a very common attitude, actually, that people who are supposed to be an authority, who are supposed to be religious authorities, we don't trust them. But more than that, when we look at what the new atheists have to say, they also say, well, religion is dangerous. Look at the evils that religion has caused. Christopher Hitchens says that religion poisons everything, and he catalogues all the events going on around the world where religion is implicated and the problems that we see. Now, he has a point. Now, I could also point out that I think he understates the extent to which atheism has also caused huge problems around the world. We just need to look at the 20th century to see that. Nevertheless, he does have a point. And so I don't want to defend religion in general. I mean, for goodness sake, I grew up during the Troubles in Northern Ireland. Look at the damage that religion often did. And when it comes to Christianity as well, some terrible things have been done in the name of Christ. But I think it's important that we distinguish between Christianity as a religious institution from Christianity as following Jesus, who told us that his kingdom is not of this world, who taught us to love our enemies, and who reserved his severest criticisms for the religious leaders of his day. See, you might be suspicious and disillusioned with religion. Well, if so, I think it's worth taking a look again at Jesus. Because he was highly suspicious of the religion of his day. In Jesus, you see, I think we find a foundation for our lives, an answer to some of the questions that I've been talking about. There really is a purpose for our lives. And that purpose is to know God. God, who is the source of goodness, of morality, of justice, of beauty and love, and all the things that we value in human life and society. The source of all these things is to be found in God. And our purpose is that we can know this God. That's what Jesus comes to tell us. Furthermore, there's a basis for morality. It's not just something we invent. It's grounded in the very character of God. And death is not the end. There's a hope beyond that. And so I think Christianity does provide the answer to some of these big questions. Now, where are we to go with that? Well, one of the things that I would like to think about here is that, in a sense, when we think about this, according to Jesus, but not according to the new atheists, there really is a purpose to life. A way we should live. And so what I would like to ask you is, could it be that you are missing out on the very purpose for which you were made? See, I have a mobile phone here. What's the purpose of a mobile phone? Well, actually, it's not so easy to say these days. It's not just for making phone calls anymore. It's for texting. It's for accessing your email. It's for the internet. It's for music. It's for downloading your apps and all the rest of it. But let's suppose I were to take this mobile phone and use it as a doorstop. Well, it might actually do a pretty good job. But that would be inappropriate. Why? That's not the purpose for which it was made. I wouldn't be recognizing its true value if I were to do that. It was made for something else. Now, could the same be true of us? That we are made for something else? So one of the things that I think we need to do is to assess where we are and where we're going, to think about the foundation for our lives. Business people, there are many business people here this morning. I think business people are very good at asking some of these questions. Okay. They ask questions like, well, what are our goals? How are we getting on at achieving those goals? Do we need to change our strategy? We need to review things. That's interesting, isn't it? That in terms of our jobs, we can do this. We ask these questions, we review things. But how often in terms of our lives do we take the time to stop and review these kinds of questions and think about where we're going, think about the purpose of our lives? And so I think both as individuals and as a society, we need to think about where we're going, to think about the foundations. Interestingly, Jesus had something to say about this. At the end of his great Sermon on the Mount, which is highly regarded by people of all religions and none, because of its remarkable moral teaching and his deep insights into human nature, at the end of this sermon, Jesus told a story about two men. They both built houses. We might imagine that, to all intents and purposes, both of these houses were really impressive and equally impressive. But there was a difference. One had a good foundation, the other didn't. And so a huge storm came along. And when the storm came, one of the houses came crashing to the ground, whereas the other remained intact. Jesus' point, of course, is that we need the right foundation for our lives. Now, we all recognize this in terms of houses. You need to have the right foundation. You'd be mad to build a house without putting in the foundations. In recent years, we've also learned this in terms of economies. If you don't have the right foundations, the whole thing can come crashing down around you. Now, what about a society? If we build a society with the wrong foundations, what are the consequences? And to take Jesus' point, what about our lives if we don't have the right foundation? Which, according to Jesus, is Jesus himself. Then, again, what are the consequences? And so what Jesus does, he, you know, in a nutshell, we look at these problems in the world and we can see these problems all around us. We only need to look at the news this morning. And what Jesus is telling us is that we've veered off track. We've veered away from God's design plan for our lives. And Jesus makes this remarkable claim that in him, in his life, and in particular in his death, God is putting things right again. And so there is a hope for a new kind of life for us. So in summary, I've looked at worldviews. I've looked at the worldview of the new atheism and compared it with the worldview of Jesus. And so in closing then, I would like to encourage you to think about your worldview, about the foundation for your life and where you're going. If Jesus is right, it might be the case that a radical change in direction is needed. And so it would be a terrible shame if you were to miss out on the very purpose for which you were made, because you haven't taken the time just to stop and to think about your direction and to ask these questions. So I would just encourage you to explore it further. Thank you very much.